Thanks for being along with us for another Agriculture Today. We're taking up on this first part of the broadcast an issue that has been looming over the livestock sector for some years now, and it's something that producers need to be cognizant of and be willing to respond to, says our guest. Glenn Tonzer has rejoined us once again. Glenn is a livestock economist with K-State Research and Extension, as you know, and he recently made a presentation via a webinar on consumer perceptions of animal health pertaining to livestock production here. Glenn, do you think it's pertinent that producers be keyed in on this area, right?
I certainly do. And part of it is because of all the discussion that's going on, and some of it is clear in direction and implication for the industry, and some could be confusing. And I don't claim to have it all sorted out, but there is a lot of interest in this. And at the heart would be society in general. I used to say consumers, but I actually want to be careful and say society collectively. So even those that don't consume meat products, as well as those that purchase beef or other meat products, increasingly are shaping how meat is produced. And we're going to talk mainly about beef, pork, you know, meat proteins here today. Mm-hmm. And they're doing that in different ways. And anybody that's on the supply side of that story needs to be cognizant of that, because at the extreme, you can have mandates put upon you that you need to be aware of. Maybe a little bit less extreme is maybe there's opportunities, right, from a market positioning perspective. So whether you want to take the market opportunity perspective or the doomsday they might run me out of business perspective, either way, you need to be aware of what are basically calls to change and or document how we produce our meat.
And for producers and the production sector to be proactive in that response, they need to understand what consumers are saying. And there have been changes in consumer signals to the industry, you say?
Yes, there has. And I'll break down the consumer signals that come at, say, the grocery store or the restaurant shelf in a moment. But I actually want to back us up even one more and say how the public is sending these signals. And the public collectively does that one of two ways. One is with their wallet, so what kind of products they buy, which we'll talk about, but also in their public relations pressure they might put on customers. So when I say consumer versus customer, I'm thinking of, you know, you, me, and our listeners that are individual purchasers and physical consumers of meat products. Mm-hmm. Customers would be entities like McDonald's, Walmart, Safeway, anybody else that's kind of in between the live animal production and the selling of that final product to you and me. And those intermediaries serve a vital role for the beef industry and the pork industry, whatever industry we're talking about, but they're also subject to targets, pressure for change, so forth. So things like claims about sustainability, claims about local sourcing, claims about not using antibiotics in your production of XYZ product, all those kind of things are partially because somebody out there is willing to pay a little more for it. And there is some evidence of that for some of the public, but they're also because those entities making those claims are under notable pressure from society in general, whether those people putting pressure on them are meat buyers or not. So while that can be very frustrating to livestock producers, and I fully appreciate that, most of our listeners are going to be traditionalists in the sense that, you know, maybe it wasn't this way 20 years ago and it can be frustrating. That doesn't change the fact that's the way it is now in the U.S. And you got to keep in mind that the bulk of the product that is consumed is where the people are, and most of the people are on the coast, not necessarily here in the middle of the country where a lot of our listeners are going to be.
So what are consumers saying? There's been some research of recent note in this area and giving some fairly clear indicators, you say, Glenn.
Yeah, so the relative importance of different attributes, and I'm going to speak to beef particularly, but work we've done, it holds across pork and dairy products as well, would be that safety and freshness are the two biggest attributes. And this isn't unique to our study, by the way. It's been kind of cross-validated many, many times, that if you can only pick two things, safety and freshness of beef is what is most important. Now, those aren't what we talk a lot about in these social dilemmas. Safety a little bit because it's related to other things, but we don't really talk about freshness. It's not viewed as controversial. It's just, you know, it's supposed to be fresh. Mm-hmm. Things that we talk about that are controversial but are a little bit lower ranking for a typical meat purchasing decision are hormone-free or antibiotic-free, animal well-being, you know, verified, the relative impact on the environment, whether it's locally sourced or not, or country of origin labeling, all those kind of things. In many ways, I call those social aspects. So they have to do with some kind of societal view about how slash where the food is produced. And they're not directly related to taste, freshness, price, safety. Yes, they have implications on those, but they're not, you know, they're more divisive because there's a debate about where we should be producing and have this environmental impact, where we should be producing and use this technology. That's very different than you know, is this product fresh or not? That's a lot less controversial.
There is this element of verification that consumers have expressed a great interest in. You might expand on that.
Sure. And I will defend their interest in this for a simple reason is most of those attributes, like a claim of antibiotic free or a claim of from Kansas versus Nebraska or whatever the claim would be on those what we call credence attributes, attributes that I cannot verify with a naked eye. So I can verify the price by just reading the label. I mean, that's pretty clear. To some extent, I can verify freshness and taste by personally engaging in that product. I cannot verify if it's antibiotic-free or not just looking at it as an average person, nor can I tell you if it is a low or high impact on the environment, those kind of things. The only way a consumer can be informed on that is for there to be a system that tracks, labels, sorts, and provides that information to them. So I don't think it's by accident that there's growing calls for verification and documentation of those practices, because that's the only way the public gets information on those practices. You don't get the same kind of call for a freshness or a taste claim per se, because we can personally experience it, or because particularly like the grocery store side or, you know, restaurants, they see an opportunity to do a guaranteed tender, right, and play to that, and it kind of quote unquote pays for itself. So it's not a debate. You do it if there's value in doing it, and the market works, if you like. Where the market's a little bit less clear is on these other things like environmental impact, origin label, and those kind of things, where the typical consumer is not revealing a higher willingness to pay, but yet they're asking for some information on that product. Mm-hmm. And that's where those customers, I use McDonald's, Walmart, and others as an example a minute ago, are seeing calls for them to help basically initiate that change.
Now, this is not to suggest as we tick through these signals and these interests on the part of consumers that things that are further down the list from safety and freshness should be ignored out of hand, right?
No, by no means would I ever say ignore these things. We're relative importance for the typical consumer. So typicals, you know, we work with 1,000 consumers here in the U.S., and I'm giving you kind of average statements. Mm-hmm. There are individuals out there that will pay a sizable premium for hormone-free. Likewise for antibiotic-free and so forth. So there are market opportunities there, and I don't want to dismiss those. But even those that are what's called commodity buyers that are focused maybe on price and safety, we should not ignore the other claims. At some point, they would not be happy, right, if they learned there was adverse environmental impact or if there was, quote-unquote, too much antibiotic use or hormone use or whatever it is that's relatively low ranking for them. It's probably not going to be a good thing if they have some bad experiences or lessons there. So everybody that's listening should be aware of these trends. But I'm trying to give general context to the current average buyer. These social issues, they're not the core determinants of a purchasing decision. Price, safety, freshness are. Mm-hmm. Yet we spend a lot of time talking about the others because of these other complicated reasons that we talk about.
Glenn, you brought up the concept of consumers paying a premium price for these practices on the part of the producer in this instance, say for vaccination use in a certain protocol, other health management tasks here. Is that something that the producers should expect of the consumer sector?
That's a tough one. I think if you expect it, you're going to be disappointed on average. Because embedded in this is I don't think the average consumer has revealed a willingness to pay for those different things. I do think there's some specific opportunities. Maybe if you are, I'll just use an example, if you're a feedlot that is aligned with a wholesale distributor and you've got contacts with, let's just call them niche restaurants in certain cities where the people that patron those restaurants have revealed a willingness to pay for these things, then I think there's an opportunity to be paid to change your production practices. But embedded in that story is you have to be aligned. And you're probably going to do some stuff with some risk that if you absorb higher production costs and you lose those relationships and or those consumers just change their mind in the future, then you've got higher production costs and you can get a return on. So it's far from risk-free. But in general, most people don't have that particular relationship I just referred to. And I would exert words of caution on quote-unquote expecting in the short term a return on investment in a classic sense of the consumers being willing to pay more. What I go further, though, is encourage people to have a longer view on this. So much of that is, should I do this to get paid on my next lot of cattle kind of mindset? And I think that's very prudent. I'm a market economist. I understand why we ask those questions. But longer term, you have to ask your question, what is it going to take for me to be in this business? What's it going to take for our industry to be in this business long term? And some of these things are becoming a cost of doing business. And the webinar that I recently gave that led to this, I actually used the analogy about technology changing on phones. Mm-hmm. And most people that are listening can remember the roto phones, you know, and I use the example about those still technically work. You can plug them into the wall and you can still make a call with them if you can find a landline, you know, plug in somewhere, but they're not exactly popular anymore because the technology's changed. And with that, the public's expectations on phones have changed. Even if they weren't willing to pay a premium for a different kind of phone, they would simply expect us to use the more modern one. So, you know, there's some pretty cheap smartphones that are still a lot better and preferred than those old roto phones. I would encourage, that's a bit of a sidebar, but I would encourage the livestock producers to have a similar mindset of the long game when we're thinking through this, because we're going to change basically how we produce meat in this country, because that's kind of what I call the social license, is as you have both the public that doesn't consume meat or maybe lightly consumes it, as well as the public that's a heavy consumer, they both have a role in shaping how we produce food.
Well, for the here and now, we appreciate the update on what you presented in this webinar earlier this week and covering the bases on where consumers stand in their perceptions of animal health management, livestock in this case. Glenn, thank you for sharing your thoughts right here. Very important.
My pleasure, Eric.
He's a livestock economist with K-State Research and Extension, is Glenn Tonzer. You're listening to Agriculture Today, and we'll be back in a few moments with more here on the K-State Radio Network.